commissioners to come back.
The first time in 11 years he has not had anybody on his t-shirt.
Is that right?
Yeah, I missed it.
I consider that an auspicious day.
I know.
We're not going to start. We have to wait a bit. Sorry.
Here we go. Another one we got. Let's go.
Okay, good. We are back in session. So, folks, we have 110 people signed up. That's over 5 hours of testimony. My assumption is people probably do not want to be here till 11 o'clock or midnight. So here is what I propose, and I've discussed this with my colleagues, and they are amenable to this. We are going to limit testimony to a minute and a half, but I will not be draconian about it. What I'm really asking people to do is be succinct, and we've heard a lot in particular from the proponents, and I think they've made a very good and compelling case. We would obviously like to hear more from the opponents to make sure that if there's something we're not capturing here, we can capture it. I'm not going to be too hard about the 90 seconds because I know a lot of people came here with the intention of speaking for 3 minutes, but we're going to start with 90 seconds, see how it goes. If you could just be as concise as possible.
Mayor, I have one question.
Yes, sir.
At 6 o'clock, we'll hit the pause button again and see how many people are left to testify. And at that point, we will decide how to proceed.
That's correct. Thank you.
Whether to continue into the evening or whatever the alternatives are?
Sure. Works for me. Good. All right. The next three, please.
Okay. We're starting with number 6, Diane Frank, Eric Lusterbos, and Christopher Frick. They'll be followed by Dan Hayes, Gregory Burkholz, and I have a special need for Bob Proctor, number 45, to go also.
Very good. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Please.
Is that my first?
Yes,
okay.
Please.
So my name is Diane Frank. I own a single family residential here in Portland, Northeast Portland. And I want to, there are so many issues that I want to talk about that I'm just feeling really constrained right now. But I do want to talk about a couple of things. And one of them is that I really feel that landlords, especially small independent landlords like myself, have really been slandered here today. That I own a house that hasn't had a rent increase for 7 years. I haven't had a vacancy in 9 years because the tenants have a very good rental situation, and I have maintained that at no small expense to myself in order to keep housing affordable. There is a real crisis in this city, but putting a burden on landlords if they want to vacate their property in order to do significant repairs, or if they want to use it for other purposes, such as moving into it themselves or a family member, is unreasonable. The other thing that hasn't been addressed in this conversation today is that the lack of housing affordability is being driven in part by Airbnb rentals taking housing off the market. That is not part of this discussion. And another part of this discussion is the fact that it is also being driven by out-of-state and foreign investors, and that really is the root cause of part of what's going on here, and that needs to be addressed. And I feel that one of the unintended consequences, as mentioned earlier, is that small independent landlords like myself, who have been conscientious and provided really top-notch housing at a very reasonable cost for tenants, will sell. And I have 4 tenants, and there will be 4 tenants looking for housing because it will go to a single-family residential. A family will buy that house. And the other thing is that I do want to talk about the fact that there's no accountability. You know, so if I do have to pay this $4,500 to give notice to tenants, it's not an eviction, it's a notice, then how do I know that that money will be actually used for housing? This is supposedly for housing, and how do I know that that's how they will use the money?
May I ask you a question? You said you have one home, is that correct?
Yes.
And you have 4 renters within that home?
It's roommates.
Okay.
It's a very large home.
And do you have 4 separate rental agreements then?
No, I have 1 rental agreement with 4 tenants.
Because that's the question I had for Commissioner Udaly in that situation, is that what the compensation would be intended to be. So that's something we can clear up later. But thank you for that example.
Thank you.
And the other thing that I want to bring up is the fact that Seattle's housing provision only refers, in terms of the relocation, and there's been some misrepresentation of that, it only refers to how, to properties that are being demolished, remodeled, or that there's a change of use. This is very different from that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hi. My name is Eric Lusterbors. I own a small real estate agency that does real estate sales and property management. So when I heard about this, I immediately, you know, I'm going to be tasked with implementing this. So I immediately went to my property owners and asked them for feedback as to what do you think this would trigger from you? What are your first ideas about this? So I'm going to share those. But first, I want to preface it with this. My company has always had a policy that we only did rental agreements, so month-to-month agreements, and this is why. It gave flexibility to both sides. You want both sides to be happy in a successful property management business, okay? So a tenant needs to be able to leave if they lose their job. A tenant needs to be able to leave if they don't like the house. A tenant needs to be able to leave for a lot of different reasons. If they buy a house, if they become first-time home buyers, okay? From an owner's standpoint, maybe their circumstances change and they need to reclaim the house for a particular reason. Maybe there's something nefarious going on in there that they're not going to be able to get enough proof to support, okay? Anyway, so the first thing that they all said, leases. They want to move to leases. They want to have certainty. They want to completely avoid the potential of this becoming an issue for them. So why is that bad? 1 year lease, that sounds like maybe a good thing for a tenant. Well, there's now an end term. So this is when the landlord has to make a decision. Do you only get to live in a place for 1 year? You know, adding months after that in a month-to-month standpoint, now you start getting into a situation where you might trigger this if you need to make a change in 3 months or 4 months or 6 months or 9 months. So there's that. And then also with leases, an eviction is a legal action, okay? So there's fees that come with that, whether it's attorney's fees or lease break fees. So you want to buy a house, you don't close on the house until 3 months, or you know, you have a few months left on your lease. You have to pay a lease break fee now, too. You lose your job, you have to pay a lease break fee. Okay. The other thing that they said, they wanted to increase deposits. I'm going to wrap it up, but there's two really interesting pieces of advice that they gave that I think you'll like, too. They wanted to increase deposits. They didn't want to do improvements during the tenancy. They wanted to only do those after the lease is expired. And they wanted us to be especially diligent with tenant repairs and billing the tenants for the repairs if they were caused by tenants. And they wanted us to be very diligent about notices because now if you're going to do an eviction, a legal process, you're going to have very strong documentation. Okay, so now quickly to the interesting pieces of feedback that I got, advice. Their biggest concern was having to give this money to tenants before the tenants performed on their responsibility of vacating the premises. So what they said was, look, we already have 1 month's rent of these people in a security deposit. We could advance that for them to be able to get, you know, their move-in costs. They also said, well, they've got 3 months of rent coming in. Instead of us having to, you know, come forthright, maybe we can come up with a situation where we're putting rent into a thing to provide that to them in the future. Thank I just you. Didn't like the idea of $4,500 potentially out of their pocket when there's money there. I mean, and the tenants are providing it. Waive rent if you're going to do that.
Thank you very much.
Could I just ask a clarification of the sponsor?
Sure.
Of Commissioner Udaly.
Sorry.
Is this intended to apply at the end of a one-year lease as well as in a month-to-month? And that's not quite a quick answer we can find.
Because it converts to a month-to-month after a year unless you re-sign a lease or vacate.
Yes.
Hi. My name is Christopher Frick. I'm a Portlander, lifetime, live in the same neighborhood I was raised, own property in the same neighborhood I was raised, small landlord, single family, and duplexes. Just heard about this last night. I'm a pretty active person, pretty in the mix, and this just came through on an email that somebody sent me because we were all very concerned about it, we being other people I know that own just a couple of properties. I feel like it's punitive, for one. Just the language alone here at this meeting and the multi-millionaire landlords is it just comes across as ridiculous in a lot of ways. We don't have the resources to take care of $4,500. $4,500 for me in one of my three-bedroom houses that I rent currently in Northeast Portland, a very hip avenue after off of Williams. That represents 2.5 months rent in this building. Now, if I haven't ever had to ever on Craigslist. People come to me and they say, I'm going to move out, and here's my friend's number. They want to move in. And I say, great. Give me the new deposit. I'll give it back to the tenant that moved out, and we'll just move on. I won't do that anymore. What I'll do as soon as I get a notice that someone's going to leave. But number one, also, I've never evicted anybody in 20 years of doing this. So these anomalies and these anecdotes and all these things, I understand they impact people personally and emotionally, and it's a very serious thing. But I have to feed my kids. I take my kids to public school. I have to service my vehicles. I have to replace the roofs, the furnace, the gutters. How many things leaked after the snow this last 2 weeks? The measure is not going to help affordable housing because we're going to take affordable housing off of the market. It's not going to help affordable housing because we're going to raise the rents to the maximum level possible. 1 month of vacancy negates a year's worth of income. I'm talking about profit. Yeah, we take your rent, we take your lease payment, and we pay a mortgage with it. If I don't pay that mortgage, no one's going to give me $4,500 to take my stuff out of that house. Okay, I've been in that position before. 2008, we almost lost all of it. It takes relationships, it takes dexterity, it takes strength and time and energy and effort, and that's what's gotten us here as small-time landlords. This is our life. Just like moving out of your life, moving out of your rental is your life. This is our life. This is my kids' college education. This is my nest egg. I have no 401k. I'm self-employed. I have no retirement. This is it. And you're limiting what I can do. Somebody said the only reason to kick somebody out is capitalism. I'm sorry, but we live in a capitalist society. The goal here is to progress. If you don't like it, change the society. And somebody said something about Trump. This is like a Trump measure. Whether you like him or not, you don't write the rule and then ask to fix it later. This has got negative consequences across the board that nobody has considered. We all want people to live in their houses. We all want people to have stability. But if everybody stops paying rent, where's my stability? Where's my family's security?
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for your testimony. Thank you.
The next three are Dan Hayes.
Folks, I really don't like cutting people off, so if you could really work with me to be succinct, I'd appreciate
it. Dan Hayes, Gregory Burkholz, and Bob Proctor need to leave early for a reason, and they'll be followed by number 11, 12, and 13, Ed Nunez, Brad Newby, and Radvan Rod Akrosh.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Dan Hayes, and I am a small investor landlord as well as an owner of a medium-sized property management company. And those are the people that I represent. I'm not here to ask you to vote no because I need to use a no-cause notice to vacate to manage a tenant's tenancy because of a troubled tenant or I don't like that tenant. I've got due process. I can go to court. Matter of fact, that's where we were yesterday. What I'm asking to consider is all those elements that you need to be able to have that flexibility is to be able to do the things that you need to do with that property, renovate it, sell it, make it better. Create more housing, more units that are available. I have 6 units in the design phase right now, and I can tell you that I will put all of them on hold because I don't know what's going to happen with my income, because I can't trust that our leaders will make sure I'm represented as well. Did you know that about 60% of my inventory, the clients that I serve, 60% of those are folks of single-family homes that are doing it for a temporary reason, 1, 2, maybe 3 years. I can tell you, nearly 100% of those folks will no longer make that inventory available. This proposal, as written, will have the opposite effect. You will lose units available to rent because people will get flat out of the market. Secondly, if you force people to pay 3 months' worth of rent as you've designed it for relocation, nearly 90% of my client base is at break-even at best. They just own one rental property. They don't make a ton of money. $4,500 to them represents easily 2 to 3 years of free cash flow. And I'm going to guess that the property tax has gone up in that period of time. Utilities will go up. Maintenance will go up. We're in a labor shortage in Portland. It costs more to get a plumber out there than it did a year ago. So what are we going to do to control that? Secondly, I take exception to being lumped into a group of landlords that treat tenants like furniture. You weren't in my car yesterday when we went out and made sure that somebody had heat at 10 o'clock at night. The vast majority of our residents are fantastic. We really appreciate them. The vast majority of landlords are great landlords, and they should be represented.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor.
I wanted to ask you a question. How many clients do you have?
300.
And you said 90% of them are single, own a one?
One house, one
house.
Unit.
That's okay,
one
unit. Thank you.
Great, thank you. That's helpful. Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Bob Proctor. I live in inner southeast Portland. I've lived in Portland since January 1986. I started out in northwest Portland, can't afford that anymore. Went to southwest Portland, can't afford that anymore. Went out to Gresham, a little bit too far out. I'm retired. I'm on disability, right? Had a divorce, and now in a new relationship. Moved out of the house that I had, and we bought a house together. I rent that house. I've only been doing it for about 5 years. I've had two tenants, one for 3 years. They decided to move out. I had a couple of months vacancy while I got somebody else in there. The tenant I have in there is great, and she's on her second year. I had a roof blow off last year. It cost $12,000 to replace that roof. Insurance covered $4,500. The remainder came out of my pocket. I don't have any contingency fund. I don't have any money built into the rent in order to make up $7,000 coming out of my pocket. Well, it actually didn't come out of my pocket. I took out a loan to pay for my portion of getting that roof replaced, right? And no one is increasing my income. So, you know, so at a minimum, and professionally, let me just back up for a moment. Professionally, I worked for the federal government for Bonneville Power, and then I had a three-year contract with the Oregon Public Utility Commission as staff to the commissioners. And that, with that experience, I am amazed at how, with all due respect, loose this process is. I'm used to processes where all the stakeholders, all the key players, are at the table at the same time. I know, and that includes very adversarial process. I've given expert testimony in rate cases, and so I understand that that's very, very hard to do. But you got to do it. And so in terms of recommendations that I have is, first, I think you got to table this proposal today. At a minimum, I think you need to represent the difference between people like myself and large corporations in Hong Kong that may own 500 units. We're different beasts.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up. Sir, Commissioner Fish has a question.
Well, it's a comment and a question. I just got a text from my wife and a my son's after-school program was just canceled because it's snowing and sleeting now, and I think we're going to need to monitor the weather. But my question, just one question to you, sir. How many units do you own? One.
Very good.
So that's helpful. Thank you.
All right. Yes, sir. You're up.
My name is Gregory Burkholz. I've been a resident of Portland my entire life. My wife and I and neighbors of the same property were displaced by a landlord issuing no-cause evictions. The landlord did nothing more than replace a stove, a working stove, and then flip the units by increasing the rent from $1,175 to $1,700 a month. My wife was a recent graduate of PSU's Master of the Public Health Program, and she was unemployed at the time, and we were both struggling with congenital medical issues, so we were barely making ends meet at the time. Now, suddenly displaced, we lived with family for 6 months, before finally rallying enough family financial support to buy into foreclosure property, needing significant repairs, which was our best option for independent housing at the time. Even today, my wife and I remain on OHP, so it gives you an idea of where our income is. As a tenant, I fully understand the consequences of a sudden and unjust displacement performed primarily for the purposes of increasing the rent. However, the rule needs to consider extenuating circumstances in situations where a neglected property has been inherited, sold, or is otherwise undergoing a change in ownership. Our current home aside, this year I suddenly found myself in an unwanted and toxic relationship with a sibling. We had just inherited our childhood home. The personal judgments and unpaid taxes against my sibling is more than his value in the property itself. Therefore, it renders the sale extremely complicated. Adding insult to injury, my grandfather maintained rent so closely under market that we've only been able to cover property taxes, insurance, and emergency repairs with absolutely no money available for urgently needed work, which includes $5,000 to replace a failing fence, $8,000 for a 25-year furnace, $20,000 for an expiring roof, and $20,000 to repair and replace decaying siding. That's over $50,000 in necessary repairs, and we don't have the money for it, and we don't have a way to finance for it.
Thank you.
I've got a solution here. You want me to?
Yeah, let's start.
The concern here is this rule needs to take into consideration where in the circumstances where a no-cause eviction is in the best interest of the landlord, the tenant, and the community. With this insight, I would ask to allow for an exception where no cause is approved, or is allow for an exception where a no cause notice is pursuant to the sale of a property.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for your testimony.
The next three are number 11, 12, and 13, Ed Nunez, Brad Newby, and Rod Akrush, and they'll be followed by Rami Roger Akrush, Robin Gottlieb, and Pete Hybertson.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Hi, my name is Ed Nunez. I'm a longtime resident in Portland. I have had a duplex for 12 years. I think it's a misconception that you own a rental and you become rich. It took 7 or 8 years, I'm not exactly sure, to break even to the point where I was making money on this unit with all the repairs and things that needed to be done. I also wanted to put a face onto what I am not a bad person. I am a landlord. This home, this rental, is going to be my legacy, hopefully, to my kids. It's part of my retirement currently. Things are moving too fast, I feel, here. They are doing it at the federal level, and now I get the feeling here, too. There should be some more review, some more thinking about what's happening here. Going back to the main problem, I feel, there are not enough units out there. I live in the Selwood Moreland neighborhood. It's a very desirable area, and right now we have, from 2014 to 2017, there have been proposed 1,251 units to go into our neighborhood. That's a 21% increase in units. But the price that they're going to be charging now for a studio, $1,200. Is that affordable? I think there should be a mandate put on that affordability is part of these new constructions. You know, last night at our meeting for Smile, we just found out that there's another 68 units going in an area that's, anyway, I'm it.
Thank you,
sir. Just a comment on that, 95% of the new construction in the last 3 years is luxury and therefore relatively unaffordable, and that's the market dynamic. We did just pass an inclusionary housing requirement that is going to mandate a certain number of a certain percentage of affordable units. And because the effective date was pegged a number of months out and we had hearings in process, close to 20,000 units are now entitled ahead of the effective date. So the next 3 years of supply will likely not be covered by inclusionary housing. But we the council agrees with you about mandating some percentage of affordable. Unfortunately, the way it's now structured, a lot of units are going to go forward not covered by that mandate.
Well,
the market is such that overwhelmingly people are buying and renting at the luxury level, which is unaffordable for most people. And you've identified a significant problem. How many units do you have?
One duplex.
One duplex with how many?
Two units.
Two units. Yeah. And this past year, the average, what was the rent increase?
We are going to do it. It would be $100 each unit.
At percentage, just in terms of percentage?
7 to 8% or something like that.
Okay. And this proposal has a 10% floor. So I just wanted to thank you, sir. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Brad Newby, long time, well, always lived in Oregon, lived in Portland stuff. Have one duplex built, windows are knocked out. I put it together 33 years ago and stuff. My thing is just, you know, I'm retired now. It's a part of my income. So this thing could be tough on me. But you guys are looking for options and stuff. I got a leaf tax. I have an arts tax, which my son's an arts, so I will support that. Create a tax on these things. People who have the units, like I said, I got a duplex. It'd be low. people with more, pay more. Create a pool, like an insurance pool. Stretch it over everybody. Airbnb included. Get it all inclusive. Come up with a fee schedule. Get yourself a pool. Bang, there it is. It's a done deal. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name is Radwan Akrush, or I go by Rad, whatever is easier. Thank you for having us, and I wanted to especially thank Commissioner Fritz. Last night at 12:30 a.m., about 12:30 a.m., I sent an email because I just heard about this, and to my shock, she was still up and she responded. I wanted to thank you for looking out for us.
And you responded back, which is even worse because I get paid to do that.
Oh, no. But no, I just wanted to point that out, that you guys really do work hard for us, and we appreciate that. I've been a landlord since 2005, and I have a regular job, but I do real estate because it's something that I enjoy doing, and I don't like my current job. So hopefully in 20, 30 years, I'm looking for retirement. Me and my brother, who's sitting with me today, we're self-made landlords. We were renters. We worked 15 to 20 hours a day, 7 days a week from 1993 to get to where we're at. We're good people. It's not like what the media or, you know, the perception of the landlord is. We take care of our tenants. We don't increase the rent that much. Our goal is to keep tenants because it's expensive every time a tenant moves out. It's very expensive. We don't want that. And we want to keep the good tenants. My problem with this proposal is the $4,500 or the relocation fee. I've had to use the no-cause eviction that saved me about maybe six or seven times. You know, I don't know if people are laughing here. You want to tell me why you're laughing? I'm just...
Let's all just be respectful of everybody's time.
No, if it's something funny, I would like to laugh, but it's... Yeah, but I'm going to continue.
Please do not respond to the chamber. This is your time to speak
okay,
to us.
Okay, but it's just I'm
ignore them.
Maybe I took a breath and I stuttered a little bit. When I used them, I don't know if you read, but I know Commissioner Fritz read my email. The first one was several years ago. I had a tenant, and one of the units, she's not supposed to have any animals. She had a boyfriend move in, unauthorized. He brought in two dogs. And I sent them notices, $50, you know, just to scare them, make them, because I never enforce those. Every other day, I got a call from other tenants. Hey, there's poop, and I'd go there, dog waste. Every day, I had to go in for like 4 months, because I had to issue the, I think it was 60 days at the time, notice. I had to keep going there myself after work, scooping it up. I saw her two or three times, and the gentleman that were living with her, but how am I going to prove that? I talked to an attorney, he's like, oh, you... It's going to be really hard. It's going to be really expensive. So I used the no-cause eviction. Other instances also, there's like more than one occupant in the unit. That's, you want me to, okay. My latest one, and I shared it with you guys. I don't know if you rented it. I've had a tenant living with me for 9-10 years. Really good people, older couple. Every year, me and my brother, it's a duplex out in Gresham. We clean the gutters. This past time we were there, he goes to the other lady at the other unit. I don't know if he's. He goes, "What's this Arab terrorist doing?" I heard it, and I didn't say nothing of it. You know, after he left, I'm like, "Okay, I don't know what's going." I didn't raise the rent by the way or do anything. But at the same time, to their credit, they always pay the rent 2 weeks ahead of time. Like if rent's due on the 1st, they'll send the 15th the prior month. Never no issues. I've had maybe one or
two. Need you just wrap it up, please. Thank you.
Okay, but something like this. Now I'm kind of scared. You know, if I have to evict him, I'm gonna have to. It's gonna be expensive to go with a cause eviction, and I'm hoping you guys would look at the no cause fee. And my other point, I'll make it really quick. Investors are business people. They look at the bottom line. When they fork out $4,500, they're going to look at it as a return. So if they were thinking about raising the rent $100 or $200, I guarantee it's going to be a lot more because they're going to focus in the $4,500 per tenant.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Next up.
Three are 14, 15, and 16. Rami Roger Akush, Guy Berliner, and Pete.
I took Roger, so he's not going to come up. I took his time.
Okay, good.
Thank you. So we'll go with Guy Berliner, Pete Hybertson, and Justin Norton Kitson. That's 15, 16, 17. And they'll be followed by Hung Kyu Nam, Lisa Ketton, if she's still here, Angela Thomas, if she's still here, and then Val Thorpe.
Great. And I'm going to ramp it up slightly in terms of enforcement on the 90, so please really try hard to keep it succinct. Thank you.
Okay, my name is Gabriel Linner, and I'll try to be quick and brief. I want to really strongly urge you against any kind of blanket exemptions for the so-called small ma-and-pa landlords, because although there are good small ma-and-pa landlords, there are also greedy ones. I happen to know because I just got slapped with a 30% rent increase, and I'm looking to have to move. And I also want to point out to you that the folks who are in the immediate crisis are the folks who are the renters. When you're in an emergency situation that involves triage, you help the folks who are in the immediate crisis. If there's folks who may get hurt down the line, you can deal with their problems later when they come. Don't deal with prospective problems down the line into the future. Deal with the immediate crisis now. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
All right. My name is Pete Hybertson, and I'm a member of Portland Tenants United. In January of 2015, my longtime roommate and my friend, Jessica, died suddenly. If she were still with us today, she'd be looking forward to her 30th birthday right now. Last time I saw her face was when a 911 operator was telling me to give CPR to her dead body. Less than 3 weeks later, my former landlord sent me a no-cause eviction notice. Sorry, I haven't told this story in public before. Needless to say, you know, I was devastated, I was traumatized, and any sympathy the landlords may have had didn't really last all that long. When I asked that they fix up a room a bit to make it easier to rent and make a fresh start, they wasted no time in kicking me out. It happened about a week later. Not only did I need to find a new place and leave my neighbors and friends and my community, I had to come up with money for move-in costs and double rent for February. Thanks to my family and friends, I was able to make it, but compared to a lot of other people, that makes me lucky. We need to require landlords to pay relocation fees to protect tenants from being displaced into homelessness. It could mean the difference for displaced and priced out tenants' survival, and it would provide a disincentive against landlords displacing our most vulnerable neighbors. It wasn't easy for me to decide to tell my story today, but I felt I had to do that to demonstrate the callous behavior that our lack of tenant protections allows right now.
Thank you.
I don't have much more to add, but I'm getting to a solution, as folks have said. Without meaningful costs for landlords for displacing people, there is little to discourage them from casually and arbitrarily depriving our friends and neighbors of basic human need. Move-in costs are only a portion of the costs that tenants need to bear here, and we face disruption in all aspects of our lives. We leave holes in the neighborhoods we are forced out of. If landlords want to claim they are a part of our community, then they should be prepared to pay for the costs of their decisions and be accountable for the harm displacement causes our city. I hope we'll look back on today as the start of a new day for renting Portlanders, and this will only happen if we build on this policy with rent stabilization and to no cause and a tenant's bill of rights. If we're going to call ourselves a sanctuary city, then we have to remember that sanctuary starts with a stable home for all of us.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, my name is Justin Norton Kurtzen. I'm the solidarity organizer for Portland Jobs with Justice, here representing that organization. We're a coalition of over 120 labor unions, community, faith, and student organizations. And we're here to say today that when tenants who already struggle to pay their rent, their bills, and feed their families, for these tenants, saving money in case you might be displaced is not only difficult but all too often impossible. When tenants are forcibly displaced as a result of no-cause evictions or exorbitant rent increases, the responsibility for that traumatic displacement falls squarely on the shoulders of the landlords who make the conscious choice to pull the blanket of security out from under their renters. As such, the responsibility to ensure that those tenants have the means to find and afford new housing and avoid houselessness also falls squarely on the shoulders of those landlords. This is true regardless of whether the landlord is a big property management company or a mom-and-pop landlord that only owns one property. Thousands of people have already been displaced in this city and are living on the streets in shelters, tents, in their cars. It's time that we enact real tenant protections to ensure no one else is displaced without the means to find new and stable housing. That's why Portland Jobs with Justice is here to urge you to vote yes and to pass this ordinance today. The health, safety, and security of our city and its tens upon tens of thousands of renters depend on it, and we're counting on you to do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony.
Number 18, Hung Kyu Nam. And if Lisa Kitten and Angela Thomas are still here, 19 and 20. And then we'll go to 25, Val Thorpe, Elise Ball, and Brian Deskingberg.
Very good.
And Desiree Taylor, Ernest Kufal, and Thomas Arnaz Marshall will also follow.
Good afternoon.
Hi, my name is Hyung Nam. We just talked about this at my union. I'm with Portland Association of Teachers in the Social Justice Committee, and we're really concerned about this, the impact of this, not only on the students at these schools that we know where people, families are being evicted, but just on the larger picture, ongoing issue. But more than that, I want to talk today against this amendment. I'm a mom-and-pop landlord. I've owned a duplex since 2002, and I can't believe people are complaining about this. I think the original ordinance is extremely generous. There's no reason landlords like me have to raise rents more than 10%. I mean, I really think it should be 3%. But anyway, and then there's no reason to evict people for no cause. I mean, landlords right now are taking advantage of an extremely tight rental market. And let's remember, we have all the advantages. You know, every year when I do my taxes, it comes out as a net loss because of depreciation, write-offs for everything I do. I mean, I put in new windows, roof, all of that. All that gets written off. None of those advantages are there for tenants. So already the system is so rigged for landlords. And on top of that, landlords take advantage of all kinds of fees we know about. I mean, this system is so unfair. This is one thing to protect tenants. And, you know, people are freezing and dying in the streets. We're all going to suffer and pay for that. And finally, it's really ridiculous for people to complain about these Wall Street landlords because we all contribute to that. If we don't have these kind of protections, these kind of things, evicting people for no reason, flipping houses and so on, encourages Wall Street to invest and these out-of-state investors to invest, to buy these properties. I mean, one of these properties I saw, they sold it within 9 years of the Normandy property and made $900,000. So when we don't have these kind of protections, it enables, it contributes to the systemic asset bubble, and it's going to crash and it'll blow up, and we will all suffer from it with the recession.
Thank you. Sorry. Who's up next?
Val Thorpe, Elise Ball, Brian Deskingberg, might be the last name, sorry. Okay. And then after them, I have a Desiree Taylor, Ernest Kufal, Thomas Arnaz Marshall, that's 28, 29, and 30.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you. My name is Val Thorpe. I live in Portland. I own three single-family rental homes in Portland. I own a business. I work for that business. I pay taxes to the city of Portland, and I vote. I believe in and I support the need for affordable housing. We are a big city now, and our city has changed. We have big city problems to solve and big city benefits to gain. I believe in proper and adequate notice times and rent stabilization. I do not believe that this proposal will solve the affordability issue. I believe it will discourage businesses and individuals from investing in Portland real estate. Portland needs business. I feel there is no business voice on this council. Without private investment in our city, the burden falls upon the government. We must have a fair and equitable partnership. I provide affordable rental rates to my renters. I have never evicted a tenant. I haven't raised my rent. I give to Join, I give to the food bank, I give to Meals on Wheels, and I give to Snowcap. But I am not a social service agency. I am running a business. My properties are an investment. I am diversifying and saving money for my retirement, and that is why I own rentals in Portland. If this temporary proposal becomes a permanent measure, at a minimum, I will increase my rents. At a maximum, I will divest from my properties in Portland, and I will invest elsewhere. Three affordable rentals will be lost, because I will sell my single-family residence to owner-occupant property buyers. The city will lose revenue from me and other like-minded investors. I am not an anomaly in a sea of good landlords.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Sorry, I'm a little nervous. My name is Elise Ball. I'm a Portland voter and taxpayer. I own two single-family homes that I now rent. And I had something very prepared, but I've listened to everybody, and so I've changed things around. But I have listened and heard everything presented thus far. I agree that we are in a housing crisis, and I don't think that anybody thinks any differently. I agree with much of what advocates and proponents of this proposal have testified to. I feel the same way, but I disagree that relocation fees and this proposal is the answer. You know, you say that you are not demonizing landlords, but you are. It has been stated by proponents of this ordinance that relocation fees won't help because there's nowhere to go. You know, this is not a cause and effect. So I am proposing what, very similar to what Russ had proposed and Gary, but let's formulate a proposal that will help. There are a couple of things that I want to point out that I think are inconsistent. The relocation fees are very inconsistent. What about the landlord who rents a 1,200-square-foot studio for $2,500 a month and they're charged a lesser penalty than the landlord who rents a 700-square-foot two-bedroom unit for $900 a month? You know, that doesn't seem right or consistent. And in the end, if this is about the tenant, let's make it about the tenant. If we should be giving relocation fees or helping ones that are below the median income that need help, this does not even address the fact that you could be giving relocation fees to tenants that don't need it. They could be a multimillionaire that's renting something in the Pearl and asked to leave because they want to sell that unit. You cannot sell a unit to a primary home. A lender will not sell a home to a primary as a primary home if there's a tenant inside. So you have to have that tenant leave. So you could theoretically be having landlords pay relocation fees to people that really don't need it.
Thank you.
I think we just need to come together. This is a time to come together, and all of this has made Portland more divisive. My clients that have bought in rentals are scared, and it is not a good environment to be in.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Brian Dessinger, and I'm a Portland voter and taxpayer. We believe a pause should be given to vote on this ordinance. The council should be looking to bifurcate the two main groups of our rental market: smaller investors with fewer rentals and the larger investors that own multi-million dollar plexes. Yes, a solution should be found. However, the answer is not to put another group of people at risk in addition to creating more hardship for renters. This ordinance not only adversely affects landlords, but will negatively affect tenants with unintended consequences. Landlords will be looking for only prime candidates as tenants. Renters with low, poor, damaged credit and income will be overlooked because they will not want to take the risk of that tenant. Landlords will be forced to raise their rents to cover a high cost of moving a tenant. As far as the cause eviction versus a no-cause eviction, we will be forced to do a no-cause eviction where we were able to do a cause eviction. That will then taint attendance record and will make it very difficult for further renting. I sympathize with the council, the landlords, and the tenants with the issues of affordable housing. I suggest we come together to the table with an open mind and work towards an agreement that we can all move forward as a community together and not divided, rather than rushing into the same manner we're seeing in our current federal administration. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Excellent. Can we submit written testimony that
yeah.
we have?
Yeah, you bet. Hand it to Carla there, and she'll make sure we all get it.
Next three are Desiree Taylor, Ernest Kofal, and Thomas Arnez Marshall, 28, 29, and 30, and they'll be followed by Sean Jillians, Billy Grippo, and Matt Williams. So right now is Desiree Taylor, Ernest Kofal, and Thomas Arnez Marshall. You go with Sean Jillians and Billy Grippo also.
Good evening.
Why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay. My name is Thomas Marshall, and I am technically a landlord, at least until next week, at which time my tenant will be moving out of the one property that I own That was my home before we had to move abroad for a few years. We are now returning home. We gave notice to the tenant in November with 3.5 months' notice, more than is required by the law. And we have a lot of sympathy for tenants. We've been renters pretty much our entire adult life. And while we lived abroad, we were also tenants, while at the same time being landlords. So we certainly understand, and we understand the housing crunch that is going on. It is real, and there need to be solutions. We're not running a business. We simply rented out the home just to keep the family afloat. And plain and simple, this ordinance, if it is approved in an unamended form, will destroy my family financially. We do not have the money to pay this relocation fee. We had no chance to prepare for this at all. Had we known this back in November, we most likely would have made very different choices. And now I am not afforded that luxury. So I am now expected, assuming this passes, to come up with $4,200 that my family simply does not have to pay for this.
I have a question. When you rented it, the person whoever rented it knew that you were going to be coming back?
No, because we did not know when we would be coming back at the time. So we've been gone for 3 years now. This is our second tenant. This is simply not something that we were able to prepare that far in advance for. We couldn't tell people that would be coming back in 3 years because we simply did not know.
So even my amendment would not help you in this situation?
It would not. Your proposed amendment to exclude small landlords would help, I believe, though, since this is the only property that we rent.
Well, I'm thinking of maybe a different amendment of if it's your own primary, if you're returning to your own primary
right,
residence.
Right, but it would not help in our case, no, because it's too short of a time. We never would have been able to say we're coming back in a year because it's been
No, I get that.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'll see what I can do. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I just, even if we are excluded from this, I feel that there are a lot of consequences that have not been fully considered. They've been largely gone over here today. I'll try not to rehash them too much. But I definitely think you're going to see fewer units built, more people who, like myself, would simply sell their unit instead. I never would have rented out under these terms 3 years ago if I had known this. We simply would have sold the home, moved on, and never been able to move back to Portland, the city that we love. And I've been here literally less than 24 hours now, and I'm very happy to be back.
Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate it. Thank you for your testimony. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. For the record, Sean Jillians with the law firm of Deckard Jillians. We represent the Oregon Association of Realtors. I am a registered lobbyist with the state of Oregon and the city of Portland as well. I think this evening, unfortunately, and throughout this afternoon, we've heard sort of broad brush strokes on both sides of bad stories on either side and sort of name-calling on both sides. And a lot of this stuff, I think, and the unintended consequences of the legislation could have been worked out if we actually involved all the stakeholders on the front end. I know that's not always easy, but I've been a lobbyist in this business dealing with housing issues for almost 15 years. I've always had a place at the table for us to discuss things at the state and local level. In fact, Commissioner Fish, when you were talking about the inclusionary zoning program that's going to go forward with the city, it was Commissioner Saltzman and myself who were going around the Capitol building as former foes, being allies in a package where we were lobbying in favor of inclusionary zoning and the housing package that passed in 2016. So to me, it is disappointing that we weren't invited more on the front end. I understand that there's some animosity between one landlord group and others. That doesn't reflect the entire landlord community in any stretch. Some of the things that you've heard about, and this gentleman is the perfect example, the single-family residential house now that's up for rental, you will see a significant diminishment in those being available. People will no longer take on the burden of renting those out, and we'll see that decline. And that's a very important housing type for families here. Similar to your amendment, Commissioner Fritz, I think it's a good step in the right direction as far as the, quote, sabbatical leave, but a number of homeowners leave the community not knowing when they'll return, and they do hang on to their own home, knowing someday they'll come back. And when you apply this retroactively, which is extremely problematic. But when you apply it retroactively, you have people moving back to the city to their own home who now have to come up with $4,500 that they never accounted for going forward. So I think that is really a big problem there. The last thing I would say to Commissioner Fish about the rulemaking process, we always are helpful and want to participate in rulemaking. The problem with rulemaking, though, is it's just fleshing out the details of an existing ordinance. The rulemaking is not going to undo something that in its plain letter won't allow it. And even if you were able to delegate the authority to a bureau, which I don't think you could, to override an ordinance, you really are going to have to come back and change the ordinance if we identify things that are in there.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I, based on what I've been hearing during the testimony and conversations with my colleagues, I think what I am going to propose is that a stakeholder group be convened under the aegis of the Housing Bureau for the purpose of hearing from both landlords and tenants about future improvements to the legislation, because I think we need to have that on an ongoing basis. And if there are changes to be made in the future, I want a mechanism for those to come back to us for consideration.
That would be greatly appreciated.
And I don't think the rulemaking per se is necessary, and I'm not interested in a hardship exemption because I can't even think how to frame it. So I'd rather just have a stakeholder committee.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name's Kelly Goss, and I'm a landlord. And I don't have a rent over 650 in Southwest Portland below the tram in the Corbett area. I haven't raised the rent since 1996, but one time for $50. And I believe in affordable living. I believe in housing the homeless. I believe in all that stuff. But I think here the focus should be more on legislating greed as opposed to legislating being able to manage your property. Now, if you're raising your rents because you can, then you shouldn't be raising them. And if you have to have a commission or something, maybe at the judicial thing when you hand in, you have to show a 72 cause or a notice for termination, or a no cause, maybe if you had to hand in your fixed mortgage statement and your taxes and insurance and prove that to the court, then they could make the determination whether you were being greedy or had to do it. I understand in the market now raising the rents because you have to pay a lot of money for a property, but what you're leaving a lot of us is no control on our property. See, with a no cause eviction notice, a lot of times you can't prove cause. You know someone smoking in the facility and it's on the lease, you don't smoke, it's a fire hazard, animals, growing pot, those kind of things. And you can't be intrusive as a landlord and look in windows and try to bust them and then prove it in court. So it's our only way to get rid of a tenant that really isn't living up to their lease without having to prove cause. And contrary to belief, because I heard something that I know is totally not factual, in FED and eviction notice, and I've been going since 96, almost always the court takes the side of the tenant. Almost always. And I heard just the opposite, and I know it not to be true.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, and another thing I'd like to say is really,
briefly,
if we could somehow control this greed thing, right, and make people accountable, it would stop all these rising sale prices, all these rising rents, because we're actually perpetuating that's what
Fair
we
enough.
Don't want
to
do.
So let's think of ways to do that, but this ordinance probably doesn't do that. Thank you very much for your testimony. The next three, please.
Our 32, 33, 34, Billy Grippo, Matt Williams, and Rudy Miles.
Good evening.
Let's go with Stephen Goldberg then also, and they'll be followed by Ryan Stroud, Jill Martins, and Jessica Greenlee.
Good evening. Go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. Hi. My name is Billy Grippo. I'm a principal broker at Windermere, and I am a landlord. I love my tenants, and my tenants love me. Well, they like me a lot. I have tenants. I'm one of those landlords that purposely underrents to maintain my... I have tenants that have been there for 13 years. I typically lose them to home ownership, which I've participated in. Well, I'm on my fourth one now. The idea of... I am so against this policy because... And it won't even really that affect me, but I'm against it because... it's just, it is a form of rent control. And I feel like it's going to hamper. I got an email today from my manager already that there's already a property listed today. People are paying attention to this. It's a rental. So it's already going. So I think that we're taking a wrong approach. I think we need to harness what some of the other speakers said, harness the real estate industry to help out. Like, where landlords and real estate people are generous people. Windermere, you can laugh, that's fine, get a joke. Windermere has given $3.25 million in the past 20 years here in Portland to a lot of the needs that we're talking about. And it's on record. So, and it's everybody knows that this situation we're in is, it's a terrible situation. We're not, it's, everyone's in agreement. There's no us versus them. I think that there's some other, is that my time?
Yes.
Okay. Some minor items in terms of, I think we need to help, just, I'll wrap it up. We need to increase supply. We need incentives, not disincentives. I think that, like, one of my ideas, I know it's not going to increase tons, but perhaps we could have a legal counsel that can draft a master partnership for two or three tenants that can afford to buy a place. There's plenty of $300,000, $400,000 homes that three or four tenants can group together. I would participate. I would be the first to sign up as a realtor to donate part of my fee. And I think that you enlist brokers. You can get credit unions. They would be willing to participate. I guarantee you, we are not the enemy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
Thanks
you,
for
sir.
Your consideration.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Matt Williams, and I own a company called Bison Properties. We manage single-family homes primarily, but I'm here representing NARPM, which is the National Association of Residential Property Managers. Our Portland chapter consists of about 45 professional members. We manage approximately 15,000 homes, primarily single-family, in the Portland metro area. I wanted to go over a few stats with you, but first I want to just be really clear. The professional organization that I'm speaking of is a group of professional licensed property managers who go through training for landlord-tenant fair housing. They implement best practices. They adhere to a code of ethics. They're licensees through the state as well. So the goal in general is to provide clean, healthy, safe environments for all tenants. We're not slumlords. Our landlords aren't slumlords. We have committed owners who are committed to providing clean, healthy, safe environments. It's a privately held asset that those owners have chosen to provide to the community. So just to hit a couple stats here, Lawyers Title pulled up some statistics that actually confirm some of the pieces that were put together here prior. There are 184 single-family homes in the city of Portland. There are 42,167 non-owner occupied. That is 22% of Portland. Single-family homes are being provided as rental units. And 34,205 of those units have local landlords. In other words, the people that have elected you are also the landlords. 81% of those homes are represented by also people who are living in your districts.
I think
that this is a significant opportunity for us to collectively work together in an unaggressive way, much more inclusive than I've understood Ms. Udaly has worked. So my resolution and our professional organization has talked quite a bit about this, is getting together a larger fund which allows all people to participate. One comment that was made earlier is that the taxpayers just can't afford it. What makes anyone believe that the landlords can afford it?
Taxpayers
in general are in a position where in pooled funds, they would have an opportunity to all contribute. If we all benefit and if it's a core value of Portland for us to provide this subsidy, that subsidy should be not only provided by us all, but it also should be applied to those who need it. We have individuals who pay rent in excess of $3,000 a month, meaning they make over $100,000 a year.
I'm going to have to cut you off now because
and those people should not be given a subsidy.
I have a quick question. Of those 34,205 local landlords, do you have a sense of how many of them own single properties?
Well, no. They're all single-family homes that are non-owner occupied and
reside
here. So they have a local Portland address.
But they may own multiple homes. I'm trying to determine how many of them own one property.
Yes. So I can tell you that I don't know that. I can tell you that in a survey of the 15,000 homes that NARPM members represent, approximately 82% of those own one or two houses.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening.
My name is Steve Goldberg. I'm here as part of MACG and also as a member of Portland Tenants United. I'm a retired attorney, and I want to briefly address the "if you pass this, we'll sue you" argument that we've been reading about in the newspaper. This ordinance does not prevent landlords from increasing rents. Oregon law specifically, as you know, preempts local governments from enacting rent control ordinances, although there are exceptions under that provision. But state law does nothing to prevent cities from mitigating the impact of rent increases on its most vulnerable citizens, which is what the ordinance before you does. Several opinions of the Court of Appeals make clear that a local